And I come from Santa Barbara, and you guys have been nothing but wonderful to me here. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, each one of you. There were some myths dispelled over the weekend. I found out that you all don't belong to the Bigger the Hair, the Closer to God Club. So that's one. And not all of you chew tobacco either. So that's pretty good. So I'm very grateful. Okay, well. Oh, yeah, LSU won, correct? Oh, yes, look at all those smiles. That's amazing. You know, and you guys know your football. It's amazing. You know, I come from a land where, you know, they refer to the uniforms as costumes. What color are the costumes? And I come from an office that, oh, I love your top. And I say, you love my top? It's a shirt. I'm a dude. What's wrong with you? It's a top. So I learned to love, and I've learned to accept, and I've learned to be inclusive in my belief system as opposed to exclusive. I have learned that there is no right or wrong in program. There is no right way to do a recovery, and there's no wrong way of doing it. You're going to do it the way you want to do it. You will be your own author of your recovery. You will determine how much you want. It depends, like, if you really believe that God has a lot of recovery here for you, then it's up to you to take as much as you want. God does tell us, take what you want, like, and leave the rest. Overeaters Anonymous says, if you want, take what you like, and if you don't like it, well, we'll give you back your misery and take off, you know? So that's, we do say that. Say a little bit about my life as far as you get into recovery, you notice that the path starts getting narrower and narrower. And you see that you really start to learn that you really don't know what you thought you knew. And you start to prove it. There was a time in recovery where I really thought I knew everything. I knew all the answers, and you had to do it this way. And I found out that that's not so, because I'm not your higher power. And I said, like I said before, God doesn't have grandchildren. And it's not my job to be telling you. And it's been said. I say it once, it's my opinion. Say it twice, now I'm trying to control you. And I've done my share of that. And I don't wish to do that anymore. The road got narrower for me in the sense that I don't do things lightly. I'm excessive in anything I do. And I used to drink a lot of caffeine. And I don't change because it just comes out of a good nature part of me. I change because I have to. Remember, I decided to lose the weight and take the step because I was dying. So it's not that Daniel's such a wonderful spiritual person. No. His ass is on the fire. Oh, my God. I just was, is she here? No? Okay. And I moved. No, that's basically it. You know, and this is the only way I function. That's the kind of knucklehead I am. So I overdid it on caffeine. So I remember starting to feel burning sensations in my stomach, and it wasn't hunger. But I kept on. And remember when I told you the story about the elderly with the Diet Coke? You know, I did tell you that, or was I dreaming? Okay, I told you. Good. I don't have issues with elderly anymore because of that. But I did start developing ulcers, and I took a big Diet Coke, and I gobbled it down, and it hit my stomach, and I thought I was going to die. Oh, my God. And I called my doctor, and she says, well, sounds like you got ulcers or something. And she says, let me take a blood test. We'll take a blood test. And so a day later, she says, look, you have H. pylori ulcers. I have just called in a prescription for you. I want you to take it for 14 days with antibiotics and Prilosec, and stay away from coffee, chocolates, greasy foods, you know, all that stuff. Anything that tastes good, basically, stay away from it. The pain was so horrendous, you know, and I remember my body feeling, there's nothing worse than being cold at the core. I can deal with the arms and the legs, but when it comes to the core, that is really hard. Well, that's what I was feeling because of these ulcers. And I remember just shaking in my bed, but I started shaking this stuff, And I said, and it took me about 6 months to feel better. So I stopped with the caffeine, you know, and people actually said, well, did you get headaches? I said, who cares? The pain with the ulcers is sufficient enough. I don't care about those freaking caffeine. So that's how I've been out. So it's been over a year and a half now without caffeine. I used to be one of those people, you know, that I would actually import my coffee from Kona because I had to get this special coffee with a special grind and, you know, these big lattes and all this stuff, and I was a gourmet. Right. Anyway, so, but when there wasn't any kind of caffeine, instant will do, you know, so that's basically how it was. But once again, it was another example of excess, how I enjoy excess. More is better. So I wasn't getting the caffeine push. I was getting the jitters. I wound up being jittery all the time. So it's always nervous and anxious. And since I stopped that, I don't have those jitters anymore or anything like that. And I don't need to get a cup of coffee to wake up. You know, I don't need it anymore. But that's what happened. So it's not because I wanted to stop. And it's not a requirement for recovery either. You know, when I tell this story in other AA programs, I just said AA program, it goes over like a lead balloon because they're scared because they're drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes, you know. So it's like, well, fine. So that's that part. And I don't change unless I really have. And I wish it was better. I wish I was the type of person that was able to change and do things for my own good. I don't. So here's the thing what I wanted to focus on is in our thinking. Maybe you've heard this before or not. Alcoholics Anonymous has a 20 questionnaire. And let me give you some examples of some of the questions. You guys seen them? Yeah. 20 questions, right? It says, do you lose time from work due to drinking? Is drinking making your home life unhappy? Do you drink because you're shy with other people? Is drinking affecting your reputation? Et cetera, right? And it's all about thinking. But here's what I like to do with this one is switch it around from the word drinking to thinking. Heads up. Do you lose time from work due to thinking? Is thinking making your home life unhappy? Is thinking affecting your reputation? Have you ever felt remorse after thinking? Have you got into financial difficulties as a result of thinking? Has your ambition decreased since thinking? That's not good. Do you want to think the next morning? Do you ever think alone? Does thinking cause you to have difficulty sleeping? Is thinking jeopardizing your job or business? Do you think to escape from worries and troubles? Has your physician ever treated you for thinking? And have you ever been hospitalized or institutionalized because of thinking? 1978, my first wife, we always got into arguments. And she would always want me to stop the car because she wanted to get out. And sometimes she would get out, and we lived in South Central in those days, which is a very bad area in Los Angeles. And, you know, and she's getting on me, all these drug dealers and everything. And this pretty girl walking down, and I'm like, Connie, get back in the car, get back in the car. You know, and so she finally get in. But she was always, when I was getting the fight, and she would always want to lunge off the car. No, don't go, what are you doing? Fighting it. It was just like that all the time. So I started working outside of Los Angeles, and one day she wanted the car, so she was driving me to work. Now, I worked from 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 12 o'clock in the evening that night, so I was working swing shift. And on the way over there, we got into an argument. And it gets to the point where Connie says, stop the car or I'll jump. Stop the car or I'll jump. Well, nearby where I worked, I remember there was the Norwalk State Mental Hospital. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take you right now where they're going to fix you right now. And I got to the gate and I buzzed it and they let us in. So walked in and I told the counselor or whoever the attendant was, this woman wants to jump off the car. She's always threatening to kill herself. You guys have to talk to her. So they separated us and they started talking. And to my amazement, they wanted to keep me. Now I said, wait a minute. She's the one that wants to jump. I don't want to jump. why do you want to keep me? And I said, you know, I have to go to work. We got to go. We got to go. No, we got to go. And we got in the car, and I told her, see, because of you, they wanted to keep me here. The truth is, I should have been the one to have been there. Because I am the jaywalker. I am the compulsive overeater. I am the addict. I am the alcoholic. And I've always found out that my best thinking has always got me some of the worst troubles. So my sponsor goes to the point to tell me, don't believe everything you think. You know, let me think about that. And I said it last night, you know, when I'm really, really, really right, I'm really, really, really wrong. Because a lot of times, people do not appreciate my expertise, especially when they didn't ask for it. You know, and people and family members get highly resentful when you start telling them how you should do things. Because the first thing they want to do is tell you to, well, you can read into the blanks, it's not good. So I've learned to shut my mouth. I've learned to accept the fact that God doesn't have grandchildren. I think some people got confused with that. Well, what is it? You don't care about your family more? I love my dad and my family, but I know where my limitations are. I know my limits. I am not this super powerful person. I am a weak addict that has control issues, that focuses on things that are just smoke screens. This is why we say in Overs Anonymous, food is just the symptom, it's not the cause. But a lot of us love to focus on the food. And we have a spiritual malady. So we try, by all means and efforts, to cut everything out of our life so we can get on to abstinence. But do we really want to surrender? No. What we're really trying to do is to convince ourselves that we can go back to controlling our portion so we'll be able to eat like another person would be able to, like a normal person. And that's where I've gotten into trouble, because 2-3 weeks of successful abstinence, I say, okay, I deserve to have this slice of cake, this piece of pie, or this, whatever. I deserve it, because I have, once again, endured to be entitled to be rewarded, you know. And that was my trouble. In fact, in my practice, we try to address that type of thinking to addicts and alcoholics, because they're exactly the same way. They have the victim mentality. You know, they believe that they've endured and they're entitled, now they get to be rewarded. And they stay sober and clean for so many weeks and so many days, and they feel, okay, now I'm entitled to be rewarded because I put up with that counselor, those classes, that therapy session, done my inventory. Damn it, I need a drink. Or I can smoke a little bit of pot, but not inhale. Or so. Anyway, so, and that's the mentality of the victim. I was taught to be a victim. My grandmother was a wonderful victim. So, and then she said, you have to suffer in order to deserve. Oh, okay. But I didn't understand that. So when a person feels that they're dying from this disease, well, yeah, I want you what you got. What do you got? Show me. And we start saying, well, hey, well, let's show, this is, we start working the steps, get yourself a response, start writing stuff, your thoughts, start reading our literature, come to meetings. Wow, that sounds good. That really sounds really good. I really appreciate that. But what happens? You get into this pink cloud where, like, your abstinence is no effort at all. Nothing is, you set up chairs cheerfully. You know, you greet people, your services up and down the region. You know, you're doing all these things, all, but this is on this pink cloud. And something happens one day when pop, and that pink cloud, you come off of it, and you start to spiral back. Now, a pink cloud is probably one of the most natural things to happen to anybody that's recovering. So I'm sure, how many of us have had a pink cloud? So we could probably all identify with that. And it's one of those where nothing was an effort. It was just great. Naturally came. we measured, looked at the food, and everything was fair. He even laughed at food. Ha, 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 I don't need that. You know, we passed by a donut shop and flipped them off. I don't need it. So what happens that brings, what is that little phase? Well, that phase is caused by a chemical called dopamine. That when it's released because of the excited stage there are, it gives you all this pleasurable sensation. And this is why it's wonderful, and you're smiling, you feel, you know, and people look at you and say, maybe Prozac is working on Daniel after all. You know, even your cat becomes friendly. You know, it's just amazing how these things happen. And so when that dopamine starts to settle down to the normal range, okay, there's a balance. Serotonin keeps me from being depressed. Dopamine keeps me, helps me to feel pleasure, but in a balanced way. That's where we fall off the pink cloud. And then we go, I don't feel it anymore. What happened? Something's wrong. No, you're at the stage where you're supposed to be. It's not meant for me to be over here at this extreme feeling happy, joyous and free and elated. And it's not my place to be over here depressed, homicidal, or suicidal. I'm supposed to be in the center. That means boring. I love it when they say, well, why'd you start drinking? I was bored. I asked one sponsor, how come you were drinking? You were eating. She said, well, I got bored. I said, well, maybe you got bored because you're boring already. Only boring people get bored. I don't get bored. Man, you leave it up to my brain. I got so much to think and I got so much to do and I can't get up from this trip because I got to keep thinking. You know, I got to think whether I want to call my sponsor, I got to think whether I want to go to work, think. So this is the stuff that we all need to understand, that this is as we trudge the road of happy destiny. I looked up that word. It means that we walk with a purpose. Well, I don't think my walk in life has been like a Mardi Gras parade. Maybe at times it has, but not recently. So I get to wake up this morning, and I don't have to see the donut crumbles all over the table, the chips all scattered all over, the empty pizza boxes, and the fries from under the table. I don't get to see that anymore. I wake up, it's exactly everything the way I left it the night before. So I get up, I do the daily routine, get up, get ready, go to work, talk to my people, case manage it, all these things I'm doing. Go to lunch, same place, same person, same thing, just a routine, nothing different. Go back to work. Finish up, return the calls, whatever I have to do, and it's time to go home. Okay, go home, get ready, let's go to a meeting. Return some calls. Talk to sponsor. There's moments when God brings something in my life that causes fun. Like, hey, you want to go dancing? Sure. For Halloween, we went to a sober dance. Had a blast. It's wonderful. Was it meant to last all night long? No. But my head says, yes, let's not stop. Don't let this music stop. See, I want everything in excess. And life doesn't give us that. It's supposed to give us in portions. Portions. There's a time to laugh, a time to cry, a time to love, and a time for war. You know, this is how it says in Ecclesiastes. But see, I don't think that way. I think that unless I'm feeling good, I must be doing something wrong. And you know, there's nothing wrong with sitting and not feeling happy. Years ago, Candid Camera did an interesting study, and they still use it in psychology studies and all that stuff. They put in a camera in a crowded elevator in New York. And they brought in one guy who everybody's facing the door, and he comes in and faces the person in front of him like this. So they're like that. So they're watching people. Now, this guy is a good actor, and he's put the camera down and look at them. And everybody's freaking out around him. They're like, you know, because you're not doing what we're doing. How come you don't turn around? And it's just a wonderful way to look at people, how their reactions are. And this is the stuff that we feel that unless, well, I always think you're having a better time than I am. You know, you had a better evening. Mine was boring. You went out and partied last night. You know, I'm always thinking that I missed out on something. No, it's just my unwillingness to accept what life has been given to me today. You know, you guys have been blessed. You got LSU to win. Obviously, God's on your side. Not in Alabama, better team. But this is funny. You know, it's like, yeah, it's cool, it's fun. But I'm like a child that goes to the park and doesn't want to come home. Danny, we got to go home. Wait, one more ride. I love the sensation of pleasure. See? And so when I'm not feeling the pleasure, I'm feeling like I've lost something. And all I'm trying to say is, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. It's okay to stop distracting yourself with pleasure. I have friends that all they love to do is go on vacations. I gotta go. Why? I gotta get out of here. And they come back and they're always tired. Oh, I'm so tired. Well, what happened? Oh, I was off having a good time. Well, I thought you were supposed to go out and relax. Oh, yeah, but I had a great time. I did this horrible thing, and I've apologized to my coworkers after that. We got into drinking iced coffee. This is before my caffeine withdrawals and stuff. And they said, Danny, would you get us a nice coffee? I said, hey, no problem. One of the ladies says to me, she said, well, make my shirts. Mine is decaf. I said, oh, okay, great. So I went downstairs, 3 iced coffees, 2 regulars and 1 decaf. Okay, let's mix it up. And I get them. So I go up there and I give the lady her decaf, and I go to my boss and I give her, and I get mine. I start drinking, and then I go back. You know, I've got this, I'm so evil. I got the spark. So I went to the lady who I gave the decaf. I said, Gloria, I made a mistake. I gave you the one with the caffeine in it. She goes, oh, my God, I could feel it. So I'll come my boss from her office. Wow, that's what I needed and all that stuff. I said, oh, Deb, I'm sorry. I gave you the one that was decaffeinated. She immediately started yawning. The power of suggestion. The power of suggestions is enormous. If I go up to you and I say, you're going to have a shitty day, most likely you'll believe me. If my head says, Daniel, you've got a screwed up day ahead of you, I'm going to have a screwed up day. The idea is to change the way I think, because if I change my thinking, I change my world. That means I have to be willing to lose some of my behaviors. And one of them is stop being a victim. You're not the only one in this world who's restricting or controlling or on a food plan. There are hundreds and thousands of other people doing the same thing. Why is it that I feel like it's only me that can't have the donuts? Why is it only me that can't have peanut butter? I was telling some people last night that I was able to eat ice cream from a gallon, but I started from the bottom eating it. So I left the top layer intact. So to the surprise when they found out that they put the spoon and went right through that little shell, and it's empty. What happened? I don't know. It dried up. You know, we compulsive overeaters, we're very sneaky. You know, like, we replace food that we've eaten, you know. Especially we freak out when we can't find the exact brand. And we're like, we're freaking out, you know, they're going to find out that, oh my God, I ate the cookies and it's not the same brand. We do all sorts of crazy things. I'm always a victim. I take food as a punishment. I'm punishing myself for being a fat slob, and this is why I can't eat like other people. I don't say to myself, I have a disease, and it's through this eating, this way of eating, I'm going to get better. It's through this way I'll get in touch with my feelings. It's through this way that I'm going to get in touch to my higher power. It's through this way I'll have a new life. Oh, no. I'm a bad person, and I deserve it, now I have to be on a diet. And that's how we live. You know. And so when you go up to someone and they say to you, make sure you get someone that has what you like, well, what can you possibly want, have that I want? You know, there's nothing in your life. Everything about you is around food. When they found out that I was going to be coming to New Orleans, one person only told me about one restaurant, I think. And the other people started telling me about this museum about photography that they have in New Orleans somewhere, I don't know. I wanted to see part of New Orleans that had been affected by Katrina. You know, I wanted to take pictures. You know, but had this been before in my days, I would have known what restaurants to go, where they serve the most food. It's all about food. You know, and it's not like that today. If I don't go eat in a restaurant in New Orleans, it's okay. You know, I eat grits here. I learned how to eat grits. Where's the fork? Well, I'm sorry. This is as close as I can get to it. I mean, this is my version of New Orleans right here, man. It's called Chattawa, New Orleans. That's John. I'll talk to him. Yeah, that's going to be a debate between me and him. But this is the thing, that it's always this deprived mentality. Maybe it's because when I was a kid, I was so chubby, I was the last one to pick to play baseball, last one to play football, last one. No, I was always picked to play football because I was always a blocker. But I was always last to play when it came to play, any other game. So maybe that encouraged that victim type of thinking. So I've had to change that a lot, and it doesn't come easy. I mean, my default is the victim. Are you absent? Oh yes, I'm absent. Are you happy? No. Okay. Well, cool. No. And the reason you're unhappy, you have to understand this, is your brain is still trying to communicate with its body. And you're no longer sedating with food, so these feelings are really surfacing a lot. And I was just trying to say that the receptors are trying to function again as they used to. So, you know, drug addicts and alcoholics go through the same thing. But the baffling part about it is, how is it that we're able to get food and turn it into an opiate? That's the amazing part. How is it that we're able to have food, have the release of dopamine and serotonin to excessive levels in our body? How does that happen? Do you know that we can change our chemicals in our brain by thinking? Have you ever been treated for thinking? Have you been hospitalized or institutionalized because of thinking? Does that make sense? Our thinking does a lot. So when Dr. Paul says, I start to live in the answer instead of in the problem, well, hell, that makes a lot of difference. And my sponsor says, look, if you tell the truth, you don't really have to remember much. Really? Well, that's true. I always had to remember. Thank you. And so this is the stuff that I've had to learn. I have to tell the truth at my expense, not at your expense. My boss said to me, did you finish that spreadsheet? Yeah. And I said, no, I am so sorry. I forgot. I'll get on it right now. I said, okay. In the past, I would say, oh, yeah, I just got to print it up. I'm going to run to the office and I'll start working on it real quick. You know, because my first instinct is to lie. It's to lie. So I was dating my second wife, and I went to her place, and I called her Nancy. Her name was Christina. So I said, Nancy. She goes, did you just call me Nancy? And my hair said, oh, shit, what rhymes with Nancy? And my hair said, your apartment is fancy. Yeah, I can see that. I said, yes, I did. I'm sorry. And that was it. Okay. Now, you want to know when you're being lied to, right? Okay. And I said to her, no, what I really was saying is your apartment is fancy. Right. Right? It's an interesting thing. We were going down the road, and this girl was walking with such a short skirt, I thought it was a headband. And that's how short it was. And the first thing my wife says, did you see her? I said, yeah. I did. the pastor says, oh, no, what are you talking about? You know, I tell the truth. You know, that's what you got to say. Yes. Yes. You know, so my thinking has been the biggest culprit that has caused me a lot of problems in my life. So this morning, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God. And this is how we believe that God's going to do it. He says, you do your part, and I'll do my part. And no matter what happens today, God knew about it beforehand. And that's so hard to do. But we divorced this morning from selfish and self-seeking motives, sonic motives. Sounds like a good plan. So now, in that case, I'm supposed to walk this day happy that whatever happens, happens. It's supposed to be that way. And like I said before, either you want high expectations in your life and very little serenity, or you want a lot of serenity and very little expectations. That's your decision. Me, I want to go for the serenity. And I want to go for the moments of laughter. We've laughed a lot as well. We want to have the moments of crying. We've cried. We want to have the moments of silence, and we've had them. That's what life is all about, is to feel all those ranges of moods. That's what it's all about. Someone described me that life is like a roller coaster. How many of y'all have been on a roller coaster? You know, how do you ride that sucker? If you hold on to with your bare knuckles, right knuckling, what happens? You get banged up pretty bad. But if you let go and put those arms up in the air, you go along for a real cool ride, man. Scary, but it's fun. A lot of us are riding life white-knuckling, everything we do. Any little thing is going to push you right over. And that's not God's grace. That is my victim mentality in full bloom. Because I resist the thought that I have a killing disease called compulsive overeating. I still believe that I can fix it. And only want it for temporary reasons. I have to remember that this disease... You ever hear somebody say, I'm a grateful compulsive overeater? You go, are you crazy? What are you grateful about? You know, well, that's what got me here. The Bible says that we look at our past and wish not to shut the door on it. So it's every negative, horrible learning situation that I went through has got me where I'm at, here. Here. So how can I look back at the past with bitterness? No. It was supposed to happen that way. But my perception was really distorted. Remember, what I cling on to, it will be taken away. If I cling on to my actions, it's going to be gone. Because everything I control, I have problems with. Everything I surrender, I don't have problems with. Do you know what? I surrendered today's weather to God. And you did a pretty good job. I surrendered God's ability to turn, to spin the world. And we're going, we're moving along. I've surrendered my children to God. And I haven't heard from them. I only hear from them when it's really something bad. Or my grandson just to hang up on me. But you know what? For many of y'all that came in from New Orleans, I bet you New Orleans will be okay when you go back. Should be fine. Or you may want to text right now just to find out. You guys still there? In your arms, all right? Yeah. I'm sure when I go back to Santa Barbara, my apartment will still be there. I hope. I surround myself with like-minded people. Birds of a feather flock together. And I need you guys. I can't do this alone. What happens when you hang out with depressed people? You get depressed. You know, and you walk around, you were feeling great until I felt like crap when I met you. You know, and I was doing okay. That coffee that I just had just went out the door. I'm starting to depressed and sleepy. But what happens when you hang out with people who are into spirituality, who are in recovery, who know about the process, who knows how you crave, who knows how you feel? Well, God, I want that. Don't go away. I want you 24/7. I can't. You don't have to go back out there and live life. So the important thing about all this is what? Well, we surrender to God on a daily basis. We surrender to God our life. We surrender to God our food. We surrender to God anything that happens is going to be in God's in our life. It's God's will. Well, that kind of sucks. I mean, when tragedies happen, am I just supposed to stand there and say this is the way it's supposed to happen? No. That's where I ask God, let me be of service to you. How can I help my fellow men? That's when action is required. You know, a little while ago, what I thought was a helicopter landing pad was really elaborate. Down over there. I said, wow, the Mormons have a friggin' helicopter. That is so cool. How come I didn't flow in like this, you know? No, it's a labyrinth. Somebody told me, I think it was you, so I decided to walk it. And I'm following these lines, going around and around. I said, well, this is really fun. I'd look around once in a while, see if anybody's looking at me. Look at that fool walking around. But I said, you know what? Take time to focus on God and pray. So I went like this. God, your will be done, not mine. God, grant me the strength to set things I can't attend. Third step prayer, seventh step prayer, all these prayers I was in. You know, and I took that time to do the whole thing, only to find myself in the center again. It's funny. When you use meditation and prayer, you get put back in the center of the herd, where the strength is. Isn't that amazing? So I found myself in the center. Okay, that's cool. Now what? Well, straight out. Go back out. You know, life is not that complicated. It really isn't, but I will make it complicated. So there is no secret formula to this. The secret formula is if you're willing to trust God, clean house, and be of service. Like I said, I hand you a checkbook. Said, hey, there's money in the bag. Go ahead, start making checks. You got two things to do. You either use it, or you just put it away, just in case. And a lot of us will do that. We're hanging on to minimal portions of program. Minimal. Because we don't want to look bad. We don't want to look stupid. You know. And one day they asked me, Daniel, you want to clean up the coffee pot? I said, okay, sure. But I need someone to show me how to do it. I will, most likely do it. Oh, and one of the ladies jumped up, I'll show you. She showed me how to do this. I learned how to clean the coffee pot. Daniel, you want to make coffee? Show me how to make it. Although she wasn't clear on how to make the decaf. I didn't know you couldn't use the other one. I scare easy. If you ever go on YouTube, look up fainting goats. These are little goats that you go boom, and they freeze over and they fall. And they're like there a few minutes. That's me. Boom, oh, I'm frozen. I scare easy. And that's my nature. I'm a fear-based man. And so anything spooks me. Like, I almost caused that stampede at the men's retreat by saying there was no chicken in line. You know, oh, God, there's no chicken, no chicken, there's no chicken. And it passed on. It was like, wow. I mean, all these big men are ready to storm through the frigging chicken for the kitchen, asking where the chicken was. We scare you. Now, this morning we went out for a walk for the cosmic walk down there, and it was pretty cool, very interesting. Different plates there. 50 million years this happened. And over there, 1983, Daniel got drunk. I said, how did the nuns know this crap? Well, they found out, I guess. But I walked it, and it was nice. And then we found where they put the bad nuns in, that little shed over there. That's where they put them over there. So I said, but it's pretty cool. It's a nice little walk. Amber walked with me this morning. Come on, girl. Come on, girl. But she only went so far. She wouldn't follow me all the way to the statue of the entrance. So me being a compulsive where you control my creep, I said, Amber, come on. Here, girl, come here. And Amber just stood there wagging her tail. And that meant no, I guess, you know. And she knows. She knows her limits. I said, my goodness, this dog is teaching me something. But she knows her boundaries. She knows how far to go. So I got resentful at her. Wanted to call my sponsor and tell him, you know what, she won't follow me. Life is so simple if you want to let it become simple. It is. Always, never feel bad to tell someone, let me think about it. Daniel, can you do it? No? Let me think about it. Well, what do you think about this? Shall we do that? I said, well, let's try it. If anything today, I have learned to be teachable. You all have helped me to stay teachable. I don't know everything. I really don't. Today, I have no problem telling you, I don't know. This is what's worked for me. Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay. I don't feel bad looking foolish. I really don't. I have to stand in front of my students all the time. And one of them was talking and said, well, you know, my schedule's all messed up and I don't know when I'm supposed to be here and when I'm not. I said, well, who's the counselor? Well, my counselor's so-and-so. Well, talk to her tomorrow and call her up and let her know. And this other kid says, well, my schedule's all screwed up too. And I said, well, who is your counselor? Call her. I said, well, you are. I said, well, let's change the subject. You know? So, if I live in the future, I'm visiting my anxiety. And there's nothing but scary there. And Mr. Fainting Goat will be there all day long, freaking himself out of the stuff that hasn't happened, worrying and just feeling miserable because of shit that's going to happen that hasn't happened. Or I'll go into the past where what I should have, could have, why didn't I know better, how could I be so stupid, blah, 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 blah. And pretty soon it's 5 o'clock. And I spent my time in the future and in the past, and my boss is upset. How come you haven't done anything? Well, I've been too busy. What have you been doing? Well, I've been in the future and in the past. I just got here right now. You know, and this is a step that I understand. You know, why is it that we just can't stay in the present? Well, somebody told me about walking barefoot this morning. I think somebody told me. I said, oh, my God. You know, they're really believing me. But it's true. Staying in the present. I'm sure had we walked in that cousin walk with our bare feet, it would have been a different experience. You know, it would have been very interesting. I'd still be out there, you know. But, you know, this is the thing that I have to remember. What is it going to take for you to stay here? What is it going to take for you to take one day at a time, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time? Yeah. This is what it always baffles me. How strong my head is in those areas. It insists on going to the future and to the past. And I have done my job as far as trying to get myself to learn these little techniques to stay present, and it works out great when I do it that way. And when that happens, nothing bothers me. It really doesn't. So when I arrived in New Orleans and outside the airport waiting for Mimi, I stood right there. Out of all this area to stand, I stood right here, right across the way from this guy that was smoking like a chimney. The first thing my head says, oh, he's smoking. Oh, man. Now, I didn't tell me exactly where we were going to be waiting. So I still stood there wondering, why does that guy smoke? And why is he smoking in front of me? Then my head says, you know, you could always move. And I grabbed my bag, and I walked over a few feet down, went from up to in from him. Just move. That's it. Just buy the case of soda and keep them in your office, Daniel. Leave the elderly alone. You know, that's basically it. Simple. Recovery is simple. We make it complicated. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. 2, can't you believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore strength? see, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Now, the question is, what kind of God do you have? Do you have a bipolar God? You don't know if He's going to be there or over here? Or do you have one that's constantly waiting to punish you? You know, with a lightning bolt and a clipboard? Oh, there it goes again. That type of God? Or do you have a God that's willing to throw you in hell or put you in heaven? It's up to you. You make your higher power. But I'm going to tell you right now, that's the higher power that you're going to have that's going to help you with food. That's the higher power that's going to help you in life. And I'll tell you what, I don't want to be no mean God in my life. Oh, no. I got enough of this brain here. I don't need anybody on the outside to make me worse. I don't need to walk around life with fear. I don't need that. So having a content God, having a happy God is very important for me. So this morning I woke up really happy. I said, I'm tired, but I'm really happy. I had a great time talking to people afterwards. It was nice. And it was like, yeah, okay. And I said, you know, let's go out for a walk. And just, you know, there were wives to say, you know, I'm kind of tired. And I said, you know, okay, well, I was going to go change my shoes. And I said, you know, I'm tired too. I really am. It's okay. You know, that's fine. You know, and so I'm going to leave you with this. This old man that lived on the top of a mountain decides to go into town, into the main village. And so he takes his grandson, a little four-year-old or five-year-old, and they both get on top of the donkey, and they start coming down this trail. So as they're going into the first little town or little village, see, these old guys are out there, and they look at them. Look at those two strong people on top of that poor donkey. So the old man heard them, so he got on, started walking with the kid on top of the donkey. And as they get into the next little town, people out there standing outside, says, look at that strong boy making that poor little old man walk. So he pulled the kid off, started walking, and they got to another little town. People outside, sitting outside, looking at, look at those two fools walking. When they have that strong donkey they could be riding on. Anyway, the last time they saw him, they were carrying the donkey. So, I don't know what the purpose was behind that story, but anyway. Now, the point is, you really can't keep people happy. You know, we all have opinions, and opinions are like armpits. They all stink. So, it's not my business to tell you my opinions. And this is what gets me into trouble, and the big book says it all the time. It's because of me. I love it when they say in therapy, well, they'll tell you, oh, when I'm in class. Well, and they tell me all their big problems. And I say, well, tell me what your part is on in all of that. Oh, that freaks them out. What do you want to go with my part? Well, she or he, you know, well, what was your part? Because there really are no victims, just volunteers. You know, what was your part? Were you dishonest? Were you selfish? Were you scared? And all those things, I come back to accountable for me. I am accountable for me today. I'm not accountable for you. I'm not accountable for you. I'm accountable for me. This is very important that I remember that. My little babies, who happens to be the youngest one, 30 years old, they don't need me anymore. They don't. You know? Dad, I'm going to move back to Florida. God bless you, son. Well, I'm going to stay after all. Okay. Well, what should I do? I don't know. Ask your mom. I still do that. Ask your mom. A 57-year-old man telling a 30-year-old kid, tell him, talk to your mom. And mommy will tell him what to do. She will. So my relationship with people today has to be on the fact that God loves them as He loves me, and that they deserve to live. So what if they cut me off on the freeway? So what if they almost ran me over? People happy. The thing is, for me, I take things so personal. And I can't. I can't take things personal. It's not all about me today. So my job is to enjoy life today. So if my sponsor says, Daniel, go out and be happy, unless you have other plans, I don't want to have any other plans. I do want to be happy. So alcoholics, when they stop drinking, they have to deal with their thinking. Compulsive overeaters, when they've dealt with their food, they got to still deal with their thinking. But not only that, like alcoholics, they have to deal with their spiritual life. How much effort are you putting into your spiritual life? Once again, that three-legged stool. If you're just thinking about food and the physical part, you're screwing yourself over because you got two other legs that you're going to knee on, which is called the emotional and physical part. More physical? Yeah, physical, emotional, spiritual. You know, you got to work on it equally. Equally. Now, I don't want to have a one-legged stool. I want three. Yeah, and this is the important part of my, you know, that I need to work at. Did I get it like that the first time? No, hell no, I didn't. But I had to be prioritized. Because what was happening, I was killing myself, and I could not understand what was going on. Why is it that I have to focus on my spirituality? So, no, we addressed the big gators first. That's all. I remember this long saying it. Not no offense to anybody here, but no, the gators first. Let's get the gators that are closest to your ass first. You notice how I'm cussing up a lot now that I'm getting out of here? But it's true. You get to the biggest one first. Well, what's the most obvious one? Well, obviously my weight is killing me. Okay, let's address that one first. Okay, now what's the other one? Well, now I have to know what is it that is required of me. Let's talk about the steps. Now what is it that I need? A sponsor. I can talk with. You know, I could tell them everything. A sponsor, I could tell them everything. That's really crazy. I was full of secrecies at one time. So, I have a power greater than myself, which is God, reality, the group. You know, this is the, we'll be restored to sanity here. This is the important part. I have never gone to a meeting and come out feeling worse than what I did. That's what's got there. So, that's the power of God. You know? And God has skin, like I said, and it manifests it in each one of you guys right there. And this is why I need you guys. Because you guys have that part of God. So, on that note, you guys have been wonderful with me. I am so grateful to you guys. I am blessed to have met every one of you. You guys have been amazing. The people that left as well, it was great. I am so honored and humbled to have been asked to come here to speak with you guys. I take you guys in my heart. And knowing that there are people over there in Santa Barbara thinking about you guys who's here as well. And I wish you nothing but the best in life, that whatever you comes your way, that you're able to trust God. Trust God. That's all I ask you guys to do. Okay? Thank you.